Welcome to the Clean and Filthy Podcast with your host, Matthew M.
Hello and welcome to the Clean and Filthy Podcast, where we are clean and serene with the filthy mind in between. My name is Matthew M. I am your host and I am an addict in recovery. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if it's your first time. Hope you stick around, hear something you like. A huge shout out to everybody for being here, for continuing to download this podcast, really getting our name out there. It's been a beautiful experience watching it and seeing just, you know, how we're growing and helping people. I absolutely love it. So thank you, everybody, for being here. And like I said, if you're new, welcome. We are the Clean and Filthy Podcast. We are here every single Tuesday live on YouTube at 5 p.m. Arizona time with our episodes available for download wherever you consume your podcast from the following day. Again, if you're watching on YouTube now, what up, everybody? Let's get that chat going. Let's get it lit. And if you're just listening afterwards and you want to hang out with us on the chat, please check us out on YouTube. We do this live stream every single Tuesday, get a good group of people together. It's a lot of fun. If you're on YouTube right now and you aren't subscribed to the Clean and Filthy Podcast page, please go ahead and do that. We only need a few more subscriptions to get us our custom URL. That's how we're going to be growing. And if you are watching live right now, please head over to wherever you get your podcast from. Make sure to throw us a quick download. Helps our numbers go up. Our numbers have been going up, up, up from all different places. I thank everybody for taking the time to do that. It really helps us grow. So shout out to everybody that's doing that. Before we go any further, I have to give a huge shout out to our episode sponsor, Etc. by Emily. If you are looking for any kind of staffing for a party or an event, make sure to check her out. Her website is down in the description below. Or if you're looking for a job, they do open interviews, and you can get all the information from the website below. Also, I have to give a huge thank you to Mad Decent Records, Valentino Khan, and Alice in Wonderland for allowing us to use the amazing song Anything as our theme music. Really, really appreciate that. And like I said, I get hype every single time I hear that song. So amazing, amazing song. Download information below. Also have to give a shout out to our VIP supporters. These are people on Patreon who are helping this podcast grow. They're making a monthly donation, and they are Stephanie, Char, Clint, and Alex. If you're interested in becoming a VIP supporter, please go to the website, www.cleanandfilthypodcast.com. And in the top right corner with all the social media links is our Patreon link. And for every VIP supporter, you get one of these awesome Clean and Filthy Podcast stickers. Very happy I was able to deliver one this weekend to one of our new contributors. So it's getting out there. We're getting stickers. They're getting out there. People are going to know who we are. So again, thank you, everybody, for the support. Thank you, everybody who's here listening, and thank you to our episode sponsor. If you're interested in episode sponsorship or having an ad on the podcast, you can reach out to me directly, Matthew@cleanandfilthypodcast.com, and we'll get you all the information and rates, prices, all that stuff. So again, thank you to all of the new subscribers. Our numbers keep climbing. I'm pretty excited. With how many new people we've been getting, I've been putting some stuff out there on Twitter. So if you're from Twitter, what up, though? Hopefully my tweet got you here, and hopefully something that you hear here has you stay here. Sorry, dumb joke. All right, before we get into our first segment, I want to make sure to do a quick little description of what we are and what we are not. Again, my name is Matthew M. I am an addict in recovery, and this is the Clean and Filthy Podcast. We are a 12-step recovery-based podcast, but we are not a 12-step meeting. This should not replace talking to your sponsor or going to a meeting or doing step work or reading the literature. We are simply here as an outlet to help people learn about recovery, have questions about addiction, learn about that, learn about what addicts go through on a daily basis and how we learn to be better human beings. That's the point of this. I will not be giving any recommendations on treatment centers or recovery residences, sober livings, home groups, or fellowships. I will not be speaking from a point of authority or anything regarding any fellowship or anything like that, because that's not what I want to do. And I want to stay in line with the traditions. At the end of the day, I just want to give my experience, strength, and hope, and a little bit of my opinion as to what has worked for this addict and help this addict stay clean. And hopefully that can help somebody else out there as well. So if you're new and you're thinking, I'm not an addict, why am I here? Well, stick around. You might hear something that really works for you, you know? The beautiful thing about recovery is that it's not about a specific drug. It's not about a specific substance that we put into our bodies. That might be what got us here. But for an addict like me, the thing that keeps me here is the ability to grow, is the ability to become a better human being, is the ability to be a better friend, a better parent, a better son. That's why I stay here in recovery. So, you know, maybe that's something that even if you're not an addict, you'll hear something that works for you. Because at the end of the day, you know, that's all we're trying to do is just help people get more information and help people grow as human beings. You know, and like I always say, it doesn't matter if you directly are an addict. Every single person in this world has been affected by addiction in some way, shape, or form. So if you're here right now, stick around. Maybe you'll hear something you like. And if you do hear something you like, please make sure to like, comment, subscribe, share this podcast out with everybody that you possibly can. That's how we're going to grow. That's how we're going to get our message out to the public. And that's how we're going to help people. And at the end of the day, that's the most important thing to me. So if you aren't already liked and subscribed on everything, please go ahead and do that. We really, really appreciate it. And I appreciate each and every one of you for being here today. Again, thank you, everybody. I have so much gratitude towards everybody who's been supporting, sending messages, getting downloads, sharing this podcast. Really, really appreciate it. So let's get into our first segment.
Let's head to the lab for some R&D. Recovery and development.
That's right. It is time for our first segment called Recovery and Development. We're heading to the lab. We got our safety goggles on. We got our lab coats, and we're going to do some work. This is the part of the segment every single week where we discuss a step, tradition, concept, or spiritual principle from the 12-step recovery model. Again, not speaking from any kind of perspective, from any, you know, one specific fellowship or anything like that. We're just going through what has worked for me and trying to get a little bit of information. Because I know for a lot of people, when they first get into recovery, there's the steps can seem very daunting. And even the ones that seem pretty simple, when we really start looking at everything within them, it could be a little bit difficult. So this is where we discuss, you know, something within the foundation of recovery. And I give my experience, strength, and hope on it, as well as a little bit of a description as to what the point of the step is, how we work the step or the tradition or the concept, and, you know, what it does in our lives. So we are on step 10, episode 10, step 10. Amazing how it works like that. If you haven't listened to the other steps up to this point, I definitely suggest doing that. You know, the steps are in order for a reason, and the podcasts are in order for a reason, because each one of these weeks is going to grow on the last one. So if you haven't, please make sure to go check them out. Shameless plug. And of course, everything can be downloaded wherever you consume your podcast. Simply search for the Clean and Filthy Podcast, or you can just go to our website, www.cleanandfilthypodcast.com, and all episodes are uploaded right there. And you can listen to them right there. You don't even have to download anything. Just check them out there. So as I said, step 10, what does it say? It says, we continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. All right, seems pretty straightforward, right? Well, let's look at first, most importantly, what are the spiritual principles that are going to be really important and active in this step? All right, we got self-discipline. Self-discipline, as we'll discuss, is a massively important one. We've got vigilance, awareness, honesty, humility, and integrity. And there's a ton of other ones that can work in there. But those are the real, for myself and my 10th step, those were the ones that were really, really important in working this step, you know, properly. So what does it say? It says that, you know, up to this point, when we look at where we are in our recovery, you know, and at this point, we probably got some time under our belts and life's probably getting a little bit better and things are getting, you know, confusing but good. And our life has changed dramatically. So step 10 is what allows that to continue. You know, we take the things from our fourth step that you know, we highlighted. The things, our resentments, our actions, our, you know, sometimes we start seeing those patterns of defects. And we take those. And then we use step 9 to help us clear the wreckage of our past, right? Well, step 10 helps us clear the wreckage of our present. If you haven't checked out episode 9 about step 9 in the amends process, check that out. Oh, I just hit Groot. If you aren't watching online, I added a new subscriber. We've got Groot with us officially. So he's officially in, he might just be supporting. I don't know. I don't know if he's actually an addict or not, but whatever. He's here. Hi, Groot. Sorry, I digress. So that's what we really build off of. You know, we look at what we did in step 4 and then in step 9, and now we're using those concepts, but for our current. You know, step 10 is a daily check-in. Step 10 allows us to keep an eye on our defects, on those things that we developed on our list in step 6. It allows us to check in on them and to be constantly aware of them. And this is especially true early on. You know, because I know for a lot of people, especially early on, even if you've gotten some time, but you haven't had a lot of time since you worked your 6th step and 7th step, those character defects can definitely still pop up. And this allows us to keep an eye on it. You know, as we talked about in episode 7, once we work our 6th and 7th step, it's not just like we snap our fingers and our defects are gone. Our defects will still find ways and means to pop up at times. But this allows us to see those things, and it allows us to keep an eye on those things. You know, it says in the literature, it says, when we apply our program of recovery to our shortcomings, we will change and grow.
That part.
And that's a fact. And we're going to get more into the actual process of how the 10th step works and what we do with the 10th step. But one of the things that we need to really, you know, look at, the reason why we do this daily inventory and make amends daily for the harm we have caused is because it allows us to form positive habits of looking at ourselves and our feelings and our actions consistently. Not just, you know, oh, well, I'm only going to look at the things I've done when I get around to my 8th and 9th step. No, this allows us to stay in contact with those things so they don't build and they don't fester and we can, you know, make them right much sooner. You know, it really helps us correct our living problems. You know, where the other steps were in the past, this is for the right now. This is for the here and now. This is for the stuff that occurred earlier today. That's why we do a 10th step. And one of the lines that I love in the literature about this step, it says, this step can be a defense against the old insanity. And we're going to get into this a little bit later when I talk about some of my personal experience with this step. But I can say from my experience, strength, and hope that when those little things start to come out, we might not even realize it. And if we're not doing a daily check-in and looking at how our life is going and the things that are occurring in our life and the problems that could come up, or maybe they aren't even problems, maybe there's something we don't even realize, those can be the scariest ones. Because then when we do finally realize them, it can be really, really overwhelming. So how do we work a 10th step? Do we just sit there at the end of the day and just boop, 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 go through your mind? There are a lot of ways to work a 10th step. And a lot of it's based on what your sponsor recommends, how your sponsor wants you to do it. You know, there's obviously literature that gives questions relating to the 10th step. But depending on what your, you know, sponsor does, it might be a little bit different than that. You know, some sponsors regardless, I would say from my, you know, experience and what I've heard from other members, is most sponsors are going to have this process be for at least 14 straight days. Some maybe for 30 days. And why do we do that? So we get in the habit of doing it. So we show that self-discipline of doing something every single day. Not, you know, oh, I'm just going to do it and then check into it a month later. No. How do we form habits? By doing them every single day. Why do we recommend going to 90 meetings in 90 days? Because we get into that habit. Why do we recommend calling your sponsor every day for the first however long? Because we get into that habit. And when we get into that habit, it becomes that much easier to do going forward. Simple as that. Simple as that. So for my sponsor that I worked my 10th step with, he had me do it for 14 straight days. And I came up with a list of questions that pertain to me. You know, there's a lot of literature that can assist with this. There's a lot of questions that can be taken straight out of one piece of literature. There's another piece of literature called IP number 9, which is called Living the Program. And within that literature, it has a lot of different questions that are simple, you know, questions you can answer at the end of the day that don't take a ton of effort and don't take a ton of work. Because I know for somebody like me, I didn't want to have questions that required me to write 5 paragraphs about each one of them. And there are some questions while working the steps that occurs. But I didn't want that because I knew that the laziness, you know, within me would come out and be like, do I really want to write about that right now? I kind of really don't. So I kept my questions more concise. And I took questions off of that IP. I took questions directly out of the literature. And then I added things that were very specific to the things I struggle with. You know, to my character defect. Oh, boy. Sorry. If you're watching on the stream right now, I just realized my shirt is very see-through and there's major nipplage action. I'm gonna lower like this so I don't get like a strike for explicit content or something. Sorry if you're on the stream right now. But I looked at these things that directly related to me, that directly related to my struggles within my 6th and 7th step, looking at the things that I had the most issue with. For some people, it might not be something they even think about. My questions were tailored to myself, so my questions might not work for somebody else's 10th step. But for me, I needed to add things on there about honesty, about laziness, about self-sabotage, about procrastination. I needed to add things on there about ego. Because even though I had worked a sixth step and a 7th step, and I was understanding my character defects, that doesn't mean that they're gone. Like we talked about, it is not a snap your fingers. It is a process. So by adding those questions that directly relate to the things that have troubled me, it makes sure that I'm more cognizant of them. And it, you know, the thing with it is that like we talk about in step 9 is that once we find those things on our list that maybe we have done harm, we have to look at them. We need to sit. We need to think. We need to feel our feelings and think about what those feelings mean. You know, with those 9th step amends that we did, we had a plan. It's the same thing with the amends within the 10th step. We need to think about what this amends is going to do. You know, there are elements within that we have to be just, we have to show discernment with them. And one of the biggest things that can really make an omission of wrongdoing ineffective is if we make that amends, as we talked about last week, if we make that amends and then we redo the action. And that doesn't mean that we shouldn't still make the amends, but what it means is that we should look at our behavior so that we can change the action and so we don't do the action again. That is what we're trying to do. We're trying to grow. We're trying to become better people. Like we said earlier, if we apply our program of recovery to our shortcomings, we will change and grow. That's what we're here for. So when we do this daily, it keeps us from leaving things undone. Because a lot of times, that's how something simple can grow into a resentment, can grow into something that might lead us to relapse. It might become something that's so overwhelming that we cannot continue. So we don't want to leave those things festering. We don't want to, you know, go to sleep angry. We don't want to be living in that, because that's an icky feeling. So the 10th step allows us to look at the things that have happened, think about the things that we've felt, and then process it accordingly and do what we're supposed to do from there. You know, like I said, it keeps things from festering. It keeps things from growing. We don't want mold growing on our recovery. We don't want mold turning into resentments. That's just not what we're trying to do. And the reason why we do this each day is so that we have those ups and downs of life fresh in our minds, so that when we are living life on life's terms just for today, and the good comes or the bad comes.
Phrasing?
I don't know if is there such a thing as bad comes. Whatever. When those things happen, we are able to approach them, sit with them, and then look at what they brought up in terms of how we feel, how we acted. Not looking back on it from 2 weeks later. Not looking back. And I'll admit, for myself personally, there are things that occur in life that when I look back at them 2 weeks later, don't even matter. But in that moment, they had value. Maybe not positive value, but they had impact. I'll say that. They had impact. So by sitting down and going over them and answering questions about them and discussing them on pen to paper, it allows us to look at all of the little nuanced elements of it, even if 2 weeks later it doesn't seem to matter at all. Because we want to be living in the present, and at that moment, that thing had impact. So we write about it right then. You know, we want to make sure to ask questions within answering these questions about how did we feel? About how did we feel, and then how did we react? It says in the literature, the first thing we do is stop. Then we take the time to allow ourselves the privilege of thinking. And I know for an addict, you know, if you were an addict like me, that line between thinking and doing, especially in active addiction, was razor thin. A lot of times thinking didn't even happen. It just was straight doing. Straight doing. Fuck the consequences. There isn't even thought about that. Let's go. But we don't have to live that way anymore. And where it says that allowing ourselves the privilege of thinking, I genuinely believe that. We now, because of the tools that we've been implementing in our recovery, we get the privilege of thinking and feeling these feelings, whether they're good, bad, or indifferent. And that sounds weird to a lot of people, to be able to get the privilege to feel pain, sadness, grief, guilt, shame. That sounds weird. But I can truly tell you from my experience, strength, and hope, that getting to feel something, even when it's not pleasurable, is one of the greatest gifts of recovery. I no longer have to numb things. I no longer have to act out in character defects for things. I can sit with a feeling and then proceed from there. It says the 10th step grants us the freedom to feel our feelings by helping us to see the difference between feeling and doing, like I just talked about. You know, we can feel something. That doesn't mean we have to do anything. We can just sit and feel. We're no longer impulsively acting like most of us always have done before. If you're anything like me, driving off impulse, living off impulse. That was the only way I knew how to survive, was just off impulse. Rational, conscious thought was not part of the repertoire, if you will. It just wasn't. But we have to look at within that, you know, the difference between what is a feeling, what is a thought, and then what we're doing and how those all tie together. Because sometimes we might have a thought that immediately triggers a feeling that immediately triggers an action. And sometimes we might do an action without the thought. And we need to make sure that we see the harmony, if you will, within them. We need to understand of this thought and how that relates to this feeling and how that relates to this action and vice versa. That is how we have a more spiritual perspective on our day, on our life, on the things that come up. That's how we do it. And one of the things within that that I really like, it says we often find that we've been doing better than how we've been feeling. Because again, sometimes we can get lost in a feeling, but our actions don't actually tie into that. And vice versa. Sometimes our actions look amazing, but our feelings are horrible. So we need to find those elements and how they line up. We also need to look at our assets, not just our liabilities. That's why on my 10th step, I had questions directly relating to my character defects. But then I also had a question like, you know, was I helpful? Was I grateful today? Did I do something to help a newcomer or help an addict? Was I of service? Did I do something for myself? Did I work on myself? Because again, we want to make sure that we see those assets for what they are. Because we can get so caught in our minds about the negative. I know I can. I can take one day of making a mistake, and that can spiral into the next thing, to the next thing. And next thing you know, I'm a piece of shit who's never helped anybody ever. I'm worthless. I'm horrible. I'm a monster who's poisoned the world. But that's not the case. As we talked about before, I am doing the best I can with what I have. I am an addict trying my best. And am I going to be perfect? Fuck no, I'm not. I'm going to be who I am. That spiritual principle of humility. Realizing that I'm not the best. I'm not the worst. I am what I am. Viewing things through a realistic lens. And that is where the humility piece really does come in with this. Because there will be days, I know there was for me on my 10th step, where I looked at certain days where I had, you know, a lot of things that I didn't answer yes positively to. A lot of days that maybe I was dishonest. Maybe I was angry. Maybe I, you know, responded unspiritually. And that's okay. Because every single day is an opportunity to do better, to grow, to become a better person. And that doesn't mean that every day is going to be perfect. Life on life's terms dictates that. And this is a great way to keep track of that by doing these questions each day at the end of the day. And it gives us this ability that, like, I don't know, it gives us ability to accept ourselves in a lot of ways. You know, when we look at everything tangibly on a page in front of us of what we've done over that day, it allows us to accept who we are. It allows us to genuinely look at who we are, not just a culmination of our actions, not just our feelings, not just our thoughts, but how all three of them work together. You know, it says in there, it says in the literature, it says we no longer justify our existence. This step allows us to be ourselves. And now there is going to be those days like I just talked about where you might have a lot of negative moments on there, or you might act in defect and you might be feeling down on yourself and like, oh my God, I lied, I cheated, I stole, I whatever those things are. But that's okay, because even if it's just a feeling, even if it wasn't an action, even if it was just a negative feeling about a situation, that gives us an opportunity for growth. That allows us to look at this feeling like, wow, I'm not feeling that great today. I'm feeling less than today. And it allows us to look at the reasons why. Why is that occurring? Did I maybe not get enough sleep? Did I not get a text back from the dude I'm talking to or the girl I'm dating or whatever? There are those elements to it that allow us to dig deeper than simply, you know, this is what I did. This was bad. Atone for it in a way. It allows us to look at the underlying elements of it. You know, one of the things is like from a perspective of anger, right? What about if anger is something that you're really working on, and that day somebody cut you off in traffic and you were doing this and wiling out like a hardcore New Yorker or something? No offense to all my New York fam out there, but y'all know how y'all are behind the wheel. Like, come on. Like, y'all honk at everything. Just saying. But maybe that's what you did. And you get to the end of the day and you're like, man, I thought I was doing better with these character defects. And I just lost my shit on this person. And hopefully you will get to a point by realizing that, that you can apply spiritual principles to that. And when that feeling comes up of this guy just cut me off, rather than defaulting to all of these, it can change the perspective to, well, maybe there's a reason that this person's running late. Maybe there's a reason that this person's whatever. We talked about this before, changing your perspective and applying the spiritual principle aspect to a character defect is how we grow. And then the next time that somebody cuts you off in traffic, maybe you don't wild out. Maybe you just have that thought of, man, like, man, this guy, fuck this guy. And then maybe, just maybe, by doing it enough, it gets to a point where the spiritual option becomes the option that we default to. That's the goal. And I'm not saying it's ever going to happen for everybody or anybody. There will still always be those things that pop up, those times in life where spirituality is not the go-to for this addict, at least. I don't know about anybody else out there, but for this addict, there are times and people and places and situations where spirituality is not my go-to. Spirituality is my go-to a lot more today than it used to be in most topics, but there's still a couple things that I just, boop, we're right back to the pastures of unspirituality. And it immediately comes out. But I'm working on those areas. I'm working on those areas because I'm able to identify them on a daily basis when they come up. And I'm able to apply the spiritual principle to help work through this. So again, this is a step that we work continuously. This is a preventative action. The more that we work this step, the less that we need to use the corrective part of the step, the making amends promptly. And again, when we do have to make those amends, we need to look at, as we did before, our part only. We aren't justifying. We aren't rationalizing. We aren't saying, you know, I flipped you off and screamed at you because you cut me off. No, I flipped you off and screamed at you, period. And I'm sorry for that. And that might seem silly. It might seem silly. You're thinking like, really? Like next time somebody cuts me off in traffic, I should really just say that? But yes, that's what I literally have done. I'm not an angry driver, but oh my God, somebody driving under the speed limit, somebody failing to signal, somebody driving in the speed lane and going slow. It's called the passing lane. You're supposed to use it to pass and then get over, period. Sorry. And in that moment, after I screamed at this person who's going under the speed limit in the speed lane, just nowhere to go and all the time to get there, I said, wow, I'm sorry that my anger came out there. They didn't hear it. They didn't know. But I knew. And I made it right in that moment. That's what we do. To not carry that along. Because I can tell you, especially back in my using days, that something as simple as that, something as simple as a dumbass driver, which maybe they aren't a dumbass, maybe just don't know, misinformed, whatever. But something like that could have an impact on my entire day because I would let it fester. And I'd be sitting at work, man, you should have seen this stupid motherfucker driving today. Why I'm dedicating negative energy to something that instead I can get out of and just say, wow, I'm sorry. And then grow. And then proceed with my day and have energy to put in positive places. It's a beautiful thing. That's a beautiful thing. Now I'll say, you know, I want to give a little bit of personal experience within this step. Because this step to me came at an interesting point in my recovery. You know, I had worked a genuine sixth and seventh step. I worked a genuine eighth and ninth step. And then I kind of faltered a little bit. And there was some time in between there. And there were just things going on in my life. And I can admit I had a pretty severe spiritual disconnect. And once I did the reading and I realized this was going to be a daily thing, I was in such a negative place within myself. I delayed it. I delayed it because I didn't want to look at what I was doing. Don't be like me. That's all I can say with that. Because living in defect, as I've said before, you know, once we know of the defects, living in them becomes very painful. You know, and it says in the literature, it says, if we do not stay aware of our defects, they can drive us into a corner that we can't get out of clean. And I was living in defect. I was living in defect and I didn't like it and I felt gross about it and I kept doing it. And I can tell you that that was one of the worst points I felt in recovery. I still felt great that I wasn't using. But the spiritual bankruptcy, not bankruptcy, because I had some. I had enough to realize, you know, that I was living in defect. But I kept living in defect. And while I didn't use, I caused pain. I caused damage to people around me, to myself, that I still am trying to make right, that I'm still trying to work through, that I'm still trying to even fully understand why living in defect was so important in that moment. And that's something that I can really say, like, is not a way to live. It's very painful. It's a very painful way to live. And I do not recommend it. You know, one of the things that it says in the literature that I love, it says, we may be busy indulging our impulses and acting on character defects. It usually takes a while before we notice the emptiness that goes along with living that way. And that was that part. I could spend the next 20 minutes just pushing that button, literally. Because for me, the way that this addict operates is that once I start living a little bit in defect, living the next little bit in defect snowballs and grows and snowballs and grows until it might not even be that painful at first. But at some point, that pain is, I mean, an absolute right hand of boom, I'm done, dropped. Francis Ngannou, right hand. If you don't follow MMA, he hits really hard. But the beautiful thing about that is that, you know, as we talk about, once the pain gets great enough, we'll do something about it. And I hate that it took my complete lack of unspirituality, my complete unspirituality. I hate the fact that it caused pain to others. I hate the fact that it damaged myself, people, relationships. I hate that. But I also am grateful because I was able to grow through that pain. And I was able to look at the things that I really didn't want to do again. And sometimes we need that awareness. Thankfully, it didn't lead me all the way to relapse on a substance. And it gave me some clarity and allowed me to see where I needed to work, where I needed to grow. And by working a genuine 10-step, if I would have not taken that time and not even started to live in defect, I don't think things could have ever gotten to where they did. Because step 10 allows us to build that relationship with ourselves and others. Step 10 makes us do a daily check-in. So that first daily check-in, I would have seen, wow, that character defect came up. Let's nip that in the bud before it goes to the next day and the next day and the next day. And next thing I know, now the pain's finally great enough. Okay, now I'll do my actual 10th step, 2 weeks worth of check-ins after the damage had already been done. And to me, that's just, looking back on it, it's just so incredibly not worth it. In the moment, living in defect, as a lot of us addicts do, we don't even qualify it. But this step allows me to see those things and allows me to grow and allows me to find balance within myself, within relationships. And relationships are so important with the people, the men and the women in whatever fellowship it is. That's how we stay clean. A loving and caring higher power and the connections and relationships that we make in the rooms. The people to check on us, the people that we can check on. So this step allows that to really grow. And I'll admit, I need to do my 10 step better. I don't every single day sit down and look at it. It's so funny how life shows up at certain times, because yesterday I was just feeling kind of irritable. Yesterday, I had some things happened and whatever. Life on life's terms, right? And I was just like, meh. Just kind of meh. And it was so crazy because, you know, doing the research and making sure I had everything ready for today's episode, it kind of forced me to sit there and do a 10th step. And I was like, oh yeah, I remember how amazing this is. And it's something I need to get better at. I need to get better at my meditating. I need to get better at my 10th step. I need to do that. Again, putting it out there. So I'm holding myself accountable through you guys. So thank you for helping me be accountable on this topic, because it's something that I know my life would benefit from. You know, and one of my favorite lines within the reading on this, it says, we find that we're happy and serene much more often than not. Feeling out of sorts becomes so rare that when it does, it's a signal of something wrong. And that is so me. Anybody who knows me knows how happy, joyous, and free I am on a daily basis. And so when I'm not, there's got to be a reason. You know, I need to look at it and see, okay, what is that reason why I'm not? Did I not get enough sleep? Am I feeling some kind of way about this? Am I projecting this? Am I taking on somebody else's stress? What is it? And the 10th step allows us to see that. So the 10th step is a vital step in growing our present and setting us up for success in the future, which is a weird thing. You know, for an addict like me, I was so focused on the past and so terrified of the future that having like sitting in the present wasn't really possible. And this step allows us to do that. It allows us to make our present better, make our present a present. Dad joke. All right. So that's what we've got for this week in the lab. And next week we'll be on step 11. It's crazy. We're almost through the 12 steps. Then we're going to be going into other stuff, traditions, concepts, spiritual principles. We got some things planned. So we've got some things planned. Hopefully this helped you out today, give you a little bit better understanding of what step 10 is really all about. And we will see you next week for step 11. So that means it's time to get to my favorite moment of the week. Sorry, had to take a little bang break there. Still waiting for that sponsorship call. Please, bang, just send me a couple cases of key lime. We're good. All right. So this week, it was interesting. There were a lot of things that happened this week that were pretty cool. First off, shout out to my son. He turned 3. We went to the Odyssey Aquarium, and he got to scream and run around with the sharks and the, you know, sea lions and the turtles and all the fish and jelly. It was fun. It was a lot of fun. He was just wiling out. So shout out to my son. It's 3. Pretty crazy. I have a 3-year-old child. Also got to give a rest in peace to Black Rob. One of the rappers, man, when I was younger, I always vibe with him. Everybody knows him for Whoa, which was a fire song. But for me personally, his absolute best was on the song I Love You Baby off Puffy's first album. Back before he was P. Diddy, back when it was Puff Daddy and the Family. That song, whoo. I love you, baby. No, you don't. You drive me. Sorry, I'm not going to sing it. Go listen to it. Fire song. Love that song. Rest in peace. Super exciting news. Season 2 of Dave on FXX is coming out June 16th. If you don't watch Dave, it is hilarious. Even if you don't like Lil Dicky as a rapper, it's hilarious. Also really like how they discuss mental health on that show. And it's actually part of the plot. And I really like that. Shout out Steph Curry. Ben Chef Steph, still can't stand him. I never really like great players when they're playing because that usually means they're beating my teams, but shout out to him. As always, Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I can't, it's so good. Huge, one of my favorite things this week. The trailer for Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings just dropped. Looks like Marvel's going a different direction. Really excited for what this phase brings up. One of my favorite things off of the internet this week. Shout out to my boy Yehuda for putting up his cat loaf structural integrity check, where he takes pictures of his cat and then rates it. Oh my God, some of the funniest things I've seen all week. So huge on that. Also, I made a triumphant return to the scene of the crime, Papago Disc Golf Course, where we had an unfortunate log incident about a little over a month ago. And I slayed. Yeah. Back in the disc golf world, I got six pars and a birdie from like 40 feet away. 1,000% luck? I don't care. It felt nice. So those are all the things randomly that would come up. And for anybody who's new in the segment, this is just a part of the show where we talk about stuff that has happened over the last week, maybe from pop culture, from news, from, you know, the world of sports, from the world of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, or maybe just Instagram, the things that have popped up and, you know, I'm just happy about that have made me feel good. My favorite moments of the week. But my actual favorite moment of the week was a feeling that I had. And this is going to be interesting. And I don't know exactly how I'm going to put this completely into words. I've been thinking about it. I was just talking to my therapist about it, like trying to verbalize this. Because there are times in my life where, you know, for the most part, I feel happy most of the time, right? I feel good most of the time. There are those times where I have those bad moments where maybe I don't feel as great as other times. But for the most part, I always feel good. But on Saturday night, I had a different feeling. And it was I had just gotten done hosting a recovery bingo night. So it was a whole day. I had like five meetings that day in different subcommittees. And then we did this event and I was like DJ and I was like calling bingo. And there was this great speaker, whatever, whatever. All the fun stuff that we do in recovery. But I just was laying on the floor listening to some lo-fi mix. Shout out to Lo-Fi Girl on YouTube. Always fire, and just had this feeling of contentment. And it was weird because so often in my life, I always have worried about what's next. What's the next step? Where are we going to go next? What's the next thing? And I really just sat in the moment. I sat in the present and I just kind of took some deep breaths and just appreciated the feeling that I was feeling. Kind of, you know, ties right into some 10th step stuff there. I just sat with it. And a lot of times I don't do that enough. Like I said, my meditation practice isn't what it needs to be. But this was just, it was a different feeling than I'd felt before. Actually just living in the present, not future tripping, not reliving the past. Not overthinking, which we know I love to do, and overanalyze and worry about this and that, and if this happens, then this will happen. No. I just laid there on the floor and stared at the ceiling and just felt right. And I don't know if this is going to make sense for anybody. And as we talked about before, this is the segment of the show where I talk about my opinion and stuff for me. So this might not make sense to somebody. Or their feeling of contentment might be way different. But for me, I just was there. I was present. And it's funny because there have been times in the past where I haven't been worried about what's next, or I've been kind of like content, but more in like a complacent kind of way. You know, there have been times in the past where I wasn't worried about what next and I didn't really care about the future. And I don't want to say, this is where I don't want to sound like I don't care about the future. Like, I'm just like, meh, I'm good, done, no more work, I'm recovered. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is that where I'm at in my life right now feels right. And in the past, it's never felt right. It always was looking for something else. Like when I was working, I used to work at a corporate bank job. And I had money and I had stuff. And I had a lot of, you know, positive stuff in my life, quote unquote. But I never felt right. I always was worried about what was next. What's going to be the next thing I'm going to do? What's going to be the next option that I have in life? Even when I was living in Vegas and I was attempting to be a poker player and ended up just becoming a professional drug addict, there were times that I was just like, meh. Because I was numb and I didn't really care. I wasn't worried about the future. But I was never feeling right. This was one of the first times that I felt genuinely just like where I'm supposed to be. life is right. Does that mean that I'm going to stop working to grow this or to work on my recovery? Obviously not. Because the only reason that I was able to feel that feeling is because of the work that myself and, I will say, us addicts do. I know for a fact that feeling wouldn't be possible without the step work, without the constant attempts to grow. You know, and so feeling right and feeling content with where I was a very foreign feeling to me. And I want to bring up a topic on this that we're going to discuss a lot more in future episodes. But there's a topic of the Enneagram. And I've mentioned it before. And it's a personality type test that you can do to see the type of person that you are and how you the lens that you approach the world with. And I'm a type 7. And so one of the things within a type 7 is that we like to have options. We try to avoid pain as much as we can. We try to, you know, look at the positive and be happy within things. But one of the things is we're always looking for that next option. We're always looking for what could be the next thing. And so one of the things, and this is one of I love having a therapist who understands addiction and recovery and also the Enneagram, because it really helps me grow. You know, I'm not here advocating outside help, but if it works for you, cool. And it works for me. And being present for me is very difficult for a type 7. You know, one of the things of being a type 7 is I am always looking for options. I'm always looking to find ways to not go through pain. But while I'm laying there, I was just being present in whatever feeling I felt. And there have been things in the past few months that have brought pain or have brought sadness. And I was thinking about those things as well on Saturday night. Not from a negative perspective, from a real perspective. And just trying to soften the view from my lens and sit with something, you know, and being able to be present and having presence requires me to be more in my body and out of my head, which is difficult for me to do. I'm always constantly centered right up here. But by living within feeling that sense of presence in the present means I had to shift it lower into my body. And when I was talking to her, she gave a great quote and said, contentment is relaxing the lens of the focus from my attention of my type. And like I said, my focus is always what's next. What are we going to do next? How can I have the most fun, feel the least pain, you know, How does that look for me? And what's interesting about this is me describing this feeling of being content, this feeling of feeling right, might be 1,000% different to somebody listening right now. And their sense of contentment might be, you know, completely different than mine. Their sense of contentment might be they got to have, you know, $10 million in the bank, their kids have to be in college, they have to do this, they have to do that, they have to do that. And that's the beautiful thing about this is it's my perspective on it. What makes me feel right? You know, I'm doing something I love. I'm helping others. I'm being able to give back what was so freely given to me in recovery. And that doesn't mean like, I'm like, oh, hey, everything's great. I've succeeded. No, I'm not saying that. But in that moment, I felt right. And I haven't felt right in a very long time. I can't think of the last time that I felt like completely right. Even times when I would be like 99% right there, there would still be that, you know, little bit that's focusing on, okay, what's next? Okay, well, overanalyze this a little bit. What if this happens? What if this happens? What are we going to do? And the level of acceptance that I felt was just really weird. And I knew as soon as I felt it, I'm like, yo, this is going to be my favorite moment of the week. I don't know how I'm going to describe it. I don't know how I'm going to bring it up. I'm not sure at all, but this is going to be my favorite moment of the week. So that was my favorite moment of the week. Hopefully somebody out there could relate to something in there. I don't know. It like I said, it's still a little bit confused into my brain as to how I put it into words there. because it's difficult sometimes to verbalize a feeling that we aren't really used to feeling, at least for me personally. And that was what we just saw happen. So hopefully somebody out there got something out of that. If not, come back next week. And if you, you know, don't like my favorite moments of the week, send me a bunch of stuff on Instagram and send me good TikToks. I'm not going to ever get on TikTok, but send me some good TikToks. And maybe that'll be my favorite moment of the week. But for this week, this one's for me. Also, before we close, I want to give a little shout out again to Quentin Quarantino. He's doing another fundraiser. Again, it's going up. We'll talk about that at another point, but it's crazy the things the internet can do. So that's what we got for this week for my favorite moment of the week. Now, let's get into our next segment.
It's time to Ask an Addict with your host, Matthew M.
That's right. It is time to Ask an Addict. This is a segment of the show where we answer viewer and listener submitted questions and this addict you are asking. So I'm the resident addict here and I like answering questions. So if you have any questions for the segment, please send them over. You can either go to our website, www.cleanandfiltypodcast.com, and contact us through the website or contact me on any social media. I'm checking all of them. So if you have any questions for this segment, anything that, you know, you're curious about, whether it's recovery related or not, just send it on over. I love answering questions. I don't know why. So please just send them over. Again, I'm giving my experience, strength, and hope and my opinion. Some of these things that we discuss are, you know, not just my opinion. Like we talked to someone about sponsorship last week. We're going to talk about that a little bit more today. And that isn't just my opinion. That's pretty, you know, straightforward from a perspective of recovery. But just because I'm saying it doesn't mean it's true. So again, my experience, strength, and hope, some of my opinion, not as much opinion as the last segment, but some of my opinion. So first thing I wanted to do is I wanted to clarify what we talked about last week. I realized afterwards when we were talking about sponsorship and what a sponsor does that I didn't mention something that's pretty damn important. You know, one of the things that most fellowships really emphasize is that sponsors sponsor the same gender. And one of the main reasons for that is that for the vast majority of people, men feel more comfortable and getting vulnerable with other men, and women feel more comfortable getting vulnerable with other women. So that's the generally accepted things in most fellowships. There are certain fellowships that it's not as big of a thing. And I do know of some people in other fellowships that, you know, it's perfectly normal for a man to sponsor a woman and vice versa. But in most fellowships, it is highly recommended that men sponsor men, women sponsor women. Now, the most important thing within that is how do you feel comfortable with your sponsor? You know, I know personally that there are certain guys that are gay and they might not feel comfortable being sponsored by a man that maybe they feel any kind of attraction to, or same thing with women. But so that in that instance, I have seen that sometimes they'll go with a woman. But at the end of the day, it comes down to whatever works for you. I've sponsored straight guys, gay guys, transgender guys. What it comes down to is what is comfortable. So I just want to make sure that that is put out there just so it's known that that is the generally accepted, you know, I don't want to say rule, because currently I have a sponsee sister. My sponsorship tree is vast and goes across the world, really. And I have a sponsee sister. I used to have a sponsee sister as well. So at the end of the day, the main point of it is that you don't want to be super sexually attracted to your sponsor, or vice versa. You don't want to be super sexually attracted to your sponsees. That could really cloud the step work, period. So that's why it's suggested as that. Again, it's not a hard and fast rule. Phrasing, but it is something that is generally accepted for that reason. So I just wanted to clarify that before we, you know, go any further. Next question we have, and I've mentioned a home group before. Somebody asked, what is a home group? This one's super simple. A home group is a meeting that you belong to. that you become a part of, an integral part of. You know, it's a meeting that you go to with regularity, with consistency, rather than just some random meeting. You know, just because you go to a meeting every single week doesn't mean it's your home group. But, you know, usually you get into some type of vibe with the people in that meeting. So when you aren't there for a couple weeks, people are like, yo, is he all right? What's his deal? The home group is also where you know, you make decisions for things that affect that home group. You know, and different home groups have different structures. You know, my home group meets 7 days a week. There are some home groups that only meet once a week. You know, so it's about finding what works for you, whether it's by location, whether it's by, you know, the vibe of the people there, the clean time that's there, the recovery, whatever it is. A home group is a place that you go to with consistency and are a part of. You know, not just going to a random meeting, but you have a value within that group. So that is the point of a home group. I mentioned it, you know, before. I just want to make sure it's clear. Most of the time, people have a home group. Sometimes I know people have multiple home groups. I technically had two home groups when I was living in Vegas. I had one that met once a week, and I had one that met 7 days a week. Just what worked for me personally. So that's what a home group is. Next question. This one, a shout out to the dude who asked this. This is a great question. It says, how does step 10 help with your fourth step? Side note, I know he's currently working his fourth step right now. So he might just be trying to get a little bit of a little cheat code here. So I'm going to give my experience, strength, and hope, and also another member's experience, strength, and hope, because this was a fun conversation that I had with another member last night to get some more insight on this, because this is an interesting thing. We talked about it earlier, where the fourth step is looking at the wreckage of our past. The 10th step is looking at the wreckage of our present, if you will. So with the 10th step being a daily check-in, it allows us to see patterns that could come up. Maybe it's something that, you know, it keeps occurring every single day that we wouldn't really be cognizant of until we see it and we're doing the work on it. And when we're looking at that 10th step every day, you're like, wow, you know, this is every single day I'm blowing up on somebody on Facebook. You know, or every single day I'm acting out in this way. Every single day I'm doing this. So it allows us to see the patterns more quickly to see if it's something we really need to work on the fourth step. And honestly, if we're not working a 10th step and we're not seeing that and it keeps happening, it probably will turn into a resentment that we need to work through on the fourth step. So shout out, I didn't come up with this quote. This quote is fire. I love this. But what was said is that the fourth step is about overt things, while the 10th step is about covert things.
That part.
Yo, that was fire. That shit right there, that shit fire. And that's so true, because so often the things, you know, we know the stuff that's on our fourth step. It's like, yo, that I got a resentment about that. That's a problem, whatever. But those little things that we might not really look at and might not really understand until we start seeing them and we start seeing that pattern, those covert things, they can be sneaky. They can be sneaky. So hopefully that helped a little bit. I thought that was a really cool question. Shout out again for that question. Really appreciate that. And I appreciate everybody's questions. If you have, you know, questions, please reach out to us. Send them over so we can answer them on air. Another question I got, this is a cool question. And, you know, one of the things we talk about is having the obsession to use being lifted. And the question asks is, when was your obsession to use lifted? And that's an interesting thing, because, like, I will say that obsession, having your obsession to use lifted, doesn't mean that you never want to use. There's a difference between a want to use and an obsession to use, in my mind. In my mind, there are times that the want to use is going to be there. And just because my obsession has been lifted doesn't mean that I don't want to use at times. I mean, we're addicts. We always are going to want to use in some way, shape, or form. I don't see how it's possible for it to, you know, something's going to come up at some point. You know, at some point in life, something's going to come up where it's going to be like, well, yeah, I wish I could do that. But that doesn't mean that I'm obsessed about it. You know, it doesn't mean that it's like, oh my God, I need it. I have to have it. Like it was an act of addiction. And so I could say for me personally, it happened pretty early. By the time I was, I would say probably by the time I had about 60 days, I did not have any kind of obsession to use. Probably even sooner than that, honestly. I can put a lot of it to a spiritual experience I had and a spiritual awakening I had in treatment when I had probably 16 days clean. And that moment is something I still carry with me every single day. And it still holds a ton of value in my recovery. And in that moment, I realized I didn't need to use anymore. Even if I wanted to, I didn't need to. And that gave me that piece of hope. You know, by this time, I was already detoxed off of the substances. I officially didn't have any substance in my body. I was no longer chemically dependent from a physical perspective on anything. And that was the first moment that I was like, okay, maybe I can do this. Maybe this is worth a try. But just because we have the obsession to use removed, that doesn't mean that still when I had, you know, like 87 days, no, not even, sorry, I had like 57 days. That's what it was. I had like 57 days. And I was driving back to Arizona for the birth of my son. And yeah, it was 57 days because he was born exactly 60 days after I got clean. And I was driving back and I had this moment of like, I don't have to go back to sober living for at least 4 days. I could get loaded right now and it would be out of my system by the time I UA'd when I got back. And it wasn't just like a fleeting thought. It was a thought that I genuinely thought about driving down the 15 freeway in Vegas from my sober living. I was like, yeah. And then thankfully I made it to like Boulder City and then crossed over the bridge. And then it was just a fleeting thought. It wasn't an obsessive thought. And that is an amazing feeling. And that's something that I go through constantly. You know, there's always going to be, especially now that more things are legal, especially in my state, especially on a day like today, like there's always going to be those things. Going through Snapchat, 3/4 of my Snapchat is people blazing up right now. And there's it's not saying that I don't have that thought of like, wow, I've never even heard of that strand. Wait, what is that? Doesn't mean I don't want to do it. It means I'm not obsessed about it and I don't need to do it. I make a conscious choice now to not. Because I have a program of recovery, because I have a higher power I rely on, because I live in a program of just for today. So the obsession was lifted early for me personally. That doesn't mean that's everybody's story. You know, I know people who struggle with that, who every single day will share in a meeting that I want to use, but they don't have to. You know, by the therapeutic value of one addict helping another and being in a meeting and sharing about it, pain shared is pain lessened. And that obsession will go away. I can say that because every single person I know in recovery, if they stick around long enough, the obsession will be lifted. Might not be on the time frame they want, might not be exactly how or when, but it is removed. And then it just becomes just like whatever. Now, when I see those type of Snapchats or I smell somebody blazing up or whatever, it's just like, yeah, whatever. Cool. That's their story. That's their life. That's not my life. That doesn't impact me. And if it really triggers me, you know, I will say that when I found out that Lamborghini was making a champagne, I was real salty that I got into recovery when I did. I was like, I never even got to drink the Lamborghini champagne. I was salty. But guess what? I'm not obsessed about it. It was just like, life on life's terms. Just for today, I ain't drinking the Lamborghini champagne. And again, when I say just for today, if you have any questions about that, please check out last week's episode where we talk about what the concept of just for today means and how we apply it in our lives. So thankfully for me, the obsession was lifted pretty early and hasn't come back. And that's a beautiful thing. Next question we have actually kind of ties right into that. This is, when do using dreams stop? Whew. Man, using dreams, especially early on, those are a beast, man. For anybody who doesn't know, you know, a using dream is a dream where you're using drugs. And they're different for everybody. And they happen, you know, randomly and rarely and, different frequencies for certain people. I remember I was sitting when I had one with 11 days clean in treatment. And I had a using dream that was, I woke up from it and I could taste the substance in my mouth. I could literally taste the substance in my mouth. And I will admit that had me fucked up. That had me fucked up that day. Not to the point like I was going to AMA from treatment. But if somebody would have had something, I probably would have used it. It had me shook. But the beautiful thing is that the further we get from our last use, the less that those using dreams have power over us. For me personally, you know, for randomly, like especially early on in recovery, they would just pop up. Most of the time my using dreams was I was trying to get the substance and then I never was able to use it. Or if I did use it, I didn't get high. And then I was so pissed off that I gave up my clean time and I didn't even get high, that then I woke up pissed off with that. Then my using dreams kind of like inception themselves, and I would have using dreams that I would wake up from. Like I would be in a dream, dreaming that I was using, and then I would wake up into that level of dream, swearing that I just relapsed. And then I would wake up afterwards like, yo, Christopher Nolan, get the fuck out of my head, bruh. Like, what are you doing? But it doesn't impact to that level anymore. It's not something that can put a cloud on the day. And when it early on, oh, it was. Early on, using dreams were very, very difficult. Using dreams were more difficult than going back to places that I'd used. You know, and for me personally in Arizona, pretty much every single QT in the valley, I've used that. You know, I felt so much more stress waking up after a using dream. It's crazy. But now that I have, you know, over 38 months away from my last use, those using dreams are just a part of life. They're just life on life's terms. It's just my subconscious just being a dick sometimes. And I can't control that. I can't control how I dream, just like I can't control what my thoughts are. All I can control is what my actions are from them. So sometimes I will have a run of using dreams. I had a run like a week and a half ago where I had a using dream, like of the dreams I remembered, probably 5 out of the 7 days. And I woke up and I was like, yo, what the fuck? But it wasn't something that ruined my day. It wasn't something that made me need to go use. It was something that caused a feeling inside me. I sat with it. I acknowledged it. I sat with it and I let it go. I didn't need to focus on it or obsess on it. I just sat with it and let it go. And the more that I've done that, the less impact using dreams have on me. And I have had a lot of using dreams. Usually it's around, you know, when you're coming up on a clean time, you know, when you're coming up on a certain, you're getting a key tag or something big's happening. Usually that's when it pops up. And usually it'll, you know, it can add a little bit to it. But all that's doing to me is it's just trying to add static. And if I can block that static out, then I don't have to deal with it. You know, I mean, I've had some intense, crazy using dreams over the last month. And by 20, 30 minutes after I woke up, it wasn't even a thought. Then it might pop into my head later, like, oh, yeah, I remember that. Christopher Nolan was doing some camera tricks up in my brain. But it's not something that has to dictate my actions. It's just my subconscious. The same way that I can't control if I dream about, I don't know, being chased by monster crabs, or I dream about driving a Lamborghini. which I don't know why my subconscious couldn't just replace all of the using dreams with like hardcore Lamborghini driving, couple other things. Wouldn't be mad at that. So let's work on that, yo. Let's work on that, because that would not be bad. But at the end of the day, they have no control unless I give them control. They have no power unless I give them power. And that took time to understand, but it is a freeing and truthful feeling once it gets to that point. You know, I've shared in meetings about using dreams. In the beginning, that's what we did. You have something, you share about it. And then it got to the point where it was like, I might mention it to somebody. But now it's not even so much like, oh my God, I had a using dream, I want to get loaded. It's like, yo, what's my subconscious doing? I had a using dream last night. Oh, that's crazy. Yeah. I mean, it's not anything more than that now for me personally. And I'm so grateful of that. Oh, I'm so grateful for that. Cause in the beginning it was really, really, really difficult. So that's what we got for using dreams. I can't say they're ever going to go away, but I can say personally that the power within them does. And the further we get away from our last use, the more power is removed. Personally, that's how I see it. So let me know what your guys' feelings are on using dreams. Do you have them a lot? Do they fuck you up? I'm always curious to hear other people's perspectives as well. So that's what we got for our Ask an Addict segment. Again, if you have anything that you want to have answered on air, make sure to send it over to Matthew@cleanandfiltypodcast.com or on any social media, and we will get it announced and answered on air. And I also like follow-up questions. So if you heard something that you don't like and you're like, you're wrong, tell me why I'm wrong. Let's have a discussion about it. Because as I said, it's experience, strength, and hope and opinion. What I'm saying doesn't mean it's right. This is just my perspective on it. So if you have a different perspective, send it over. I'm definitely curious. All right. We are almost out of time today. But first, we got to get to them clean time shout-outs. That's right. This is the part of the show where every single week we like to celebrate and recognize addicts who have reached specific milestones. Now, these are, universally accepted within all the different fellowships of a newcomer, which is anybody up to 29 days, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, 6 months, 9 months, one whole year, 18 months, or multiple of years. But we also like to give other shout outs here. We like to do big whole numbers. So 100 days, 1,000 days, 500 days, 5,000 days, whatever it is. We just like to do this. So I get mad hype about clean time. We talked about it last week. And I love making sure we give people recognition. So if you have a clean time that is occurring from now until next Tuesday, please make sure to send it over to me so we can add you to the list and we can give you some shout outs. So first and foremost, we got two newcomers this week. First off is Virginia. Hell yeah. And then we got my sponsee, Vincent. Well done. Both are newcomers. Most important people, period. And next up, with one whole year clean, we got Trisha. Well done. And then I think he's like my sponsee cousin once removed, but I'm boys with his sponsor. So huge shout out. Officially, I believe it was yesterday, he hit his year, to Michael. And then next up, with 16 years, we've got Jim. Woo, reload. And then finally, with 17 years, we have one of my absolute favorite human beings on the planet. Definitely one of the greatest people in Arizona recovery. We got Miss Laura B with 17 years. I'm running dry. Yeah, that's how we do. In case anybody's wondering, we give them boops for each year. So shout out to everybody who picked up clean time today. If you didn't, you ain't celebrating anything, don't use. And guess what? You will. And we hope that everybody enjoyed that and feels, grateful for being congratulated, because you should be. Motherfucking miracles happening out here. Every single day clean is a miracle, period.
That part.
Yeah. All right, y'all. Well, thank you, everybody, for being here. Great episode. Absolutely love all the support. Again, like, comment, subscribe to all of the social media. Sorry if you're watching live, had a little camera issue there, but you know, we made it work. It's what we do, adapt to life on life's terms. If you are, you know, again, massive, massive thank you for all the new downloads. Please, if you heard something you like it, subscribe, share it to somebody so we can get the word out there. If you didn't hear anything you like, let me know, because I want to make sure to make this content as good for as many people as we can. So huge thank you again for episode sponsor, etc. by Emily. All the information below. Again, thank you to our VIP supporters. Another huge thank you to Mad Decent Records, Valentino Khan, Alice in Wonderland for allowing us to use this beautiful song as our music. And if nobody's told you today they love you, I love each and every one of you. Thank you for being a part of my recovery for the last hour and 20 minutes. Remember, what I can't do alone, we can do together. See everybody next week. Love you all. I just wanna feel anything.